Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Dr. John Eusing. Dr. Eusing is a leading authority on the Inland Empire economy, an area he has been studying since he wrote his doctoral thesis on the region in 1960.
In the 60s.
His influence on the business and political landscape has been so extensive that the LA Times named him one of the 100 most powerful people in Southern California in 2006. He is the writer of the Quarterly Economic Report, an economic newsletter now in its 20th year. His company, Economics and Politics, Inc., provides consulting services for municipalities and counties with economic strategies, statistical data packages, recommendations for public policy, and briefing presentations to businesses and political leaders about the nature, growth, and economic trends of Southern California. Dr. Eusing's website includes copies of his newsletter, PowerPoint presentations of various speeches, and photographic glimpses of his exotic travel adventures. And Dr. Eusing, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Okay, what's our latest exotic travel? I might as well start there because you're not kidding when you say that.
I was on a 24-day trip from Tasmania to the deepest penetration you can make by ship into Antarctica. So we crossed the Southern Ocean, went through for 6 days through the ice floes, got into the Ross Sea and went down to where the huts were set up by the three explorers in the early 20th century who finally reached the South Pole.
Was there anyone else crazy enough to be on that ship with you?
There were 90 of you.
Okay. Oh, that's pretty amazing. I know somebody said you once were jogging in Africa where the lions were sort of around.
Oh, yeah. One of the dumber things I did was when I was in my 30s, I ran 8.5 miles through the heaviest concentration of lions in the Serengeti National Park in Tanzania.
Well, you know, nothing in your professional career would lead us to believe that you had that bent, but I think that's pretty cool.
It wasn't my brightest moment, let's put it that way. I was running miles at 7 miles a minute in those days, and 2 miles after my truck caught up with me and got me on it, we went right by a lion that came up out of the side of the road and took a swipe at the side of the truck.
Wow.
So that was literally 14 minutes in front of me.
Wow. And I bet he could run faster, at least for a little while, than 7 minute pace.
That is a lot faster. I won't tell you what the safari leader said to me because it couldn't be repeated on the air.
No, I'm sure he was not too happy with you.
He was not too happy.
Well, back to the subject at hand. You know, one of the things, and I really enjoyed going to your website, very informative. The quarterly newsletter letter's great. You do your presentations and you have all the charts there. And one of the charts showed this journey of kind of an emotional journey where you have these cycles. And when we were in that 2005 and 6, there was a point where it said point of maximum financial risk. And is it your sense that at the point of maximum financial risk, you also are at point of euphoria for what you have just experienced, and you're most likely to ignore?
Yeah, and we're not up to that yet. I mean, when I started using that chart, if you recall the cycle on it, it starts at depression, then it goes to hope, then it goes to relief, then it goes to optimism, then it goes to excitement. And where I believe we are at this point, for those of us who study it really closely, is we're approaching excitement. That the economy in 2013 did incredibly well, and I think when we get the revised data, which we will in the first week of March, we're going to find that 2014 was equally strong. And that is really important information for where we are and where we're going. In 2013, we created 46,833 jobs. 2014, the preliminary data says 32,000.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they revise it, it'll come out closer to 50.
Okay.
Because that $46,000 job figure, the preliminary data said 14,000, and it got revised from 14 up to 46. So I think we're going to see not that big of a jump, but a jump from 32 up to around 50. Those 2 years, 13 and 14, then mean the Inland Empire is beginning to act normally, which makes it one of the strongest economies in the state.
When you look at that chart, one thing that strikes me is that it seems like that progression is historically true and that it's sequential in nature. So you usually do have that process. And as a matter of fact, when you get to the excitement stage, you rarely go back to the hope stage. You first have to reach euphoric stage.
Yeah, when you go euphoric, then you start heading on the way down.
Right. And
because usually at that point, people are starting to make dumb decisions.
And you also, tell me if you think this is accurate. I notice in real estate that you'll have not just rationalization of what a lender would loan you. You have a rationalization of what you're willing to spend as a portion of your budget if someone will let you. But you'll also drive the farthest ever at the peak of a market and say, it's okay for me to drive 60 miles to work.
Yeah, that's exactly what goes on. That has been going on in Southern California since World War II. The way in which the market has opened up is in the 50s, the big hot spot was the San Fernando Valley. In the 60s, it was the San Gabriel Valley. Towards the end of the 60s, it was getting into Claremont. When you get to the 70s, it's beginning to move into Montclair, into Chino, into Upland. Similarly, it's starting in the early 70s to get into Orange County. By the end of the 70s, it's really, really seriously into the Inland Empire. But all west of the 15 freeway. As you move into the 80s, it starts to go over the 15 freeway and move east. And it's usually driven first by housing. About 10 years later, the housing hits, and then after the housing, you get the population serving jobs. So you start to see the retailers, the local banks, consumer service operations, all that grow up. But the primary jobs are still someplace else. So you have commuting going on through that whole period. A little later, what happens is the industrial developers show up because they're out of land too. And that's about a 10-year lag. And they begin to bring the jobs that a lot of the people who moved earlier are qualified for because they were people who came for affordable housing and they have really blue-collar type skills. That occurred in the West End starting in 1985. The first warehouse went up. Now there's 99 million square feet in Ontario.
Right.
And that's still there. It's a German electrical firm. It's still sitting there right near the corner of the 15 and the 10 freeway. But that phase has now moved all the way into San Bernardino, Redlands, and Moreno Valley. While right now, where the housing went at the end of the last phase was up into the high desert, out into Beaumont, and then down the 215 freeway into places like Paris and Hemet and San Jacinto. But it's a repeating process. The final stage of it when the area actually grows up is when the high-end housing moves. And in the last cycle on the West End, that's what we saw going on. The high-end housing went into the arc that sort of starts in Rancho and then curves around next to the borders of the two counties down through into Corona.
You were the first person that I ever heard put those pieces together, by the way, and it made perfect sense to me. And the fact that you've been looking at this since the 1960s, I mean, real estate prior to 1970, at least, for California versus national price, it was almost on par. And then the 70s, all of a sudden, we took off like we were the only place, like we were on a separate planet. What was the driver for that?
Population growth. It was when the baby boomers really hit the markets, and we had a young population in Southern California, so they hit the markets really, really hard. And I used to laughingly say in those days that the world was tilted to the west and the south, that if it was loose in the United States, it rolled here.
Well, then, and you mean migration?
But a lot of it was migration.
Yeah.
Back in those days, it was a lot of migration. We still have a lot of population growth, but almost all of it now is births over deaths.
Right, or it's immigration versus domestic migration.
Actually, if you look at the in the last 14 years, from 2000 to 2014, overwhelmingly the growth is just births over deaths.
Right.
Net migration is just slightly positive, including both foreign and domestic.
You've landed on this word excitement. So what year in our past most recently did you feel like we were on that first leg of excitement? Was that?
It would have been probably about 02.
Okay.
Remember, we had the great downturn of the early 1990s, which was the aerospace defense cutbacks. And in real estate, that difficulty lasted till 97. You then started to see growth, but it was slow until you got to about 01, 02, and it started to take off. By the time it gets to 05, it's insane because it took off too hot. And, you know, some of the problems we ran into were really the 06, 07, 08 period of time.
Right. Well, what's interesting, from what you've just said, we had a growing economy that really was very healthy somewhere 2000, 2004, yet we had about a $30 per barrel oil price. And we had a strong dollar then. So are those two things connected? Strong economy and strong dollar equals low oil price?
Not necessarily. Part of the reason why you have such a strong dollar right now, frankly, is the United States is the strongest economy in the industrial world, or the modern upscale world.
Right.
We're pretty much it in terms of an economy that's in pretty good shape. But the interest rates are extremely low, but they're going to start drifting up here likely before this year is over. The rest of the world, the major countries that you think about, China, Japan, Europe, really are not in very good shape. And as a result of that, with the U.S. as the world's reserve currency, a lot of money is being stored in dollars in our treasury bonds and treasury bills because it's safe, but there's some return on investment. And it's in an economy that is, in fact, in good shape versus everybody else. And that makes the dollar very strong. Now, there's good things and bad things about that. It's good for Southern California because it means imports will be very strong because everything the rest of the world sells is cheaper for us. That'll propel imports. And one of the things that happens in the Inland Empire is we handle imports. That's what these big facilities that we have around here are all about. Exports, however, which is the manufacturing core of the country, will in fact be hurt. Well, California's manufacturing has been killed off by regulation a long time ago, so it's really not growing, so the major pain will be felt elsewhere.
When you have a shift like that, where you have the dollar change value fairly quickly, how long does it take to manifests itself in more imports versus less exports?
It probably is about a six-month lag. It takes a while. Actually, the same thing is true of the decline in oil prices. The decline in oil prices really has freed up a lot of income, particularly for lower middle-class income families. They really haven't adjusted their spending yet. It takes a while for that to get into people's calculus in terms of what's going on. And so I think it's about a six-month lag.
Back to the price of oil, putting money in people's pocket. Is the effect of low price have an effect on the economy, or is it the opposite also? Is the effect of the economy have an effect on oil prices?
If I'm in North Dakota or I'm in Kern County, I don't like it.
Right.
Or Texas. On the other hand, if I'm not in those kinds of places, this is really a bonus. Because stop and think, if you take an area like the Inland Empire, this is not a wealthy area. You have a lot of families here that spend virtually 100% of their income on something. If I reduce the price of something major, which obviously gasoline is a major cost in most families, if that becomes lower, it frees up income to go use for other things. And so it is, in effect, is like a tax cut. It raises the ability of people to spend and therefore raises the level of activity. But again, there's a lag, and we really haven't seen it show up yet, which is interesting because I think most economists, including myself, would be seeing it by now, and we really haven't seen it show up in the retail data yet.
Well, along the same vein, we have ridiculously low interest rates, which really create affordable housing, in a sense. Is that spurring people on to buy, or are they still being incapable of getting a yes answer from a lender at this point?
Well, that is it's really interesting. If you look at the characteristics of the Inland Empire economy, you would think that housing would be booming out here right now. Just to put it in perspective, the middle-priced house in L.A., half above, half below, is $481,000. In Orange, it's $678,000. In San Bernardino County, it's $255,000. In Riverside, it's $305,000. So there is an enormous potential saving for people to migrate to the Inland Empire and buy. They aren't doing it. Our affordability rate for people who live here at the median income of families in the Inland Empire compared to the prices here, we're at a 47% affordability. Perfect is 50. 50 would say 50% of the families can afford 50% of the houses. It's 25% in LA and San Diego and only 20% in Orange. So if anybody wants to buy, 80% of the families in Orange County can't afford their middle price house, 75% in LA and San Diego. But they're not doing it. Now, why is really an interesting question. And I think it's a combination of things. A major part of it clearly is lending. The lending isn't occurring. The higher FICO scores in order to qualify, the difficulties that have been thrown in people's path by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the tougher requirements on FHA lending. By the way, the last three are all starting to loosen a little bit right now, which is good. The FICO scores thing is still there. The other element, I think, which you can't really measure, is fear. I think people remain a little bit afraid. And until we've been in the into this recovery period where optimism really starts to penetrate into people's behavior, that's what's holding up, I think, a real recovery in real estate. I'm old. I was born in 1941, before World War II, just before it. My mother and father went through the Depression. They didn't buy a suburban house until 1955. Long after the Depression and the war were behind us. I think there's a similar phenomenon going now that people who got hurt by the recession are just being very conservative in their spending behavior.
And you know what's interesting? What you said, I think, has a lot of validity. And there's some people that discount that, saying, well, this last experience was no depression. But if you didn't go through the Great Depression and this was the worst thing you ever experienced, it could have had almost the same effect of making you very cautious.
Absolutely. The unemployment rate in the Inland Empire was 15%. The year I was born in the nation, which is the last year of the Great Depression, it was 14.3%. So the Inland Empire really had a depression. And, of course, the real estate sector went completely into a real depression. I mean, we lost over half the jobs in the sector during that downturn.
Well, and what you just said, we just talked about, one of the charts you talked about in your presentations is that we've gained back, by and large, or even greater numbers of jobs than what we lost.
But in the country, that's true, and in the state, that's true. In the Inland Empire, we will cross that threshold in 2015. The two big years that I'm talking about, 13 and 14, will get us within about 10 to 12,000 jobs. This year, we'll probably add another 40 plus, so we'll be out of the hole finally. And the mix of jobs in the Inland Empire, much contrary to what you hear a lot from the country, is pretty similar to what we had prior to the recession, with logistics replacing construction for the blue-collar workers as the place where they've gone to be able to get decent wages.
Well, and what type of jobs come under the heading of logistics?
That's everything from somebody that's starting out for, say, a full-time, probably for $11.50 an hour. Then that's somebody that's doing a very elementary task. If you stick in the sector and you go up with it, the middle income within the sector is $44,000. A truck driver driving a heavy truck, heavy-duty truck, those guys have a median, half above, half below, at $43,500. You've got people in warehouses that have the ability to handle any of the computerized operations. They do real well. So it's a sector that if you get in it and you learn the technologies within it, you can do very, very well.
Okay.
Certainly a middle-class income. If you're a guy and your wife is working in another sector, if you're a woman and your husband is in another sector where they're making, you know, working in retail or something, that family's making 65 to 70.
Logistics then is moving products?
The logistics sector has two basic functions that we see in the Inland Empire. One is the truck drivers, the guys with the rigs.
Right.
And the other is the people working inside the large warehousing facilities handling the cargo. More and more what's going on inside the buildings is being driven by technology. So there's robotics involved. There's, you know, everybody's driving a forklift. And computerized controls are becoming more and more serious.
There's a picture on your website. There were two companies. One was Amazon. And one, was it Macy's?
Yeah, the reason those are on there is everybody knows Amazon. One of the things I say to people in an audience is, oh, we don't like logistics because of all the trucks. So I say to people, there are two things you need to do. One, look at the labels on your clothing. Look at the labels on your appliances. Look at the labels on your shoes to see when things are made. Those are imports. And you're the problem because that's what you're buying. And so that comes in through the ports, gets moved by truck into the facilities out here, gets managed here, and then leaves here to either get circulated in retailers across the Inland Empire and Southern California as a whole, or they go across country to all the various places that have distribution centers throughout the country. Pretty much any place this side of the mountains on the East Coast. Then the other group is, I ask my audiences, raise your hand if you didn't buy something for Christmas online.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually one or two persons, always with gray hair, that kind of meekly raise their hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other thing we're doing is we're buying online. Well, if you're buying online, you're not going to the store. You're buying online, and you've got these big warehousing operations that the things you're buying are coming out of and being delivered to you. Well, a lot of the cargo has to go to them to be able to do that. So the other thing is if you're buying online, you're helping drive those big facilities, and those ones are really big. I mean, they're 750,000 to 1,800,000 square foot buildings. A lot of employment inside of them because there's a lot of touching of product because, frankly, there are so many different things that people will put into an order. It's pretty difficult to really computerize all that.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I was thinking, and we only have a half a minute left, and I think I'll save that for the next section. Let's talk, just give people your website so people can go there, please.
Yeah, it's www.johnhusing, JohnHusing.com. The other place where you can find me is I'm the chief economist for the Inland Empire Economic Partnership, and their website is www.ieep.com.
Okay. Dr. Husing, thank you for joining us in this segment, and we'll come back for the next one.
Okay. Good talking to you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.